Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And along with our colleague, Stephen Slate, we wrote that book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
Yes. Well, what do we have to talk about today? Well, first of all, we want to talk about our products.
Mm-hmm. We do. I want to talk about something that is dear to my heart, which is the deprogramming from the 12 Steps course, which I designed along with Michelle, of course. Few years back when we realized there was a super need for it. And so if you're leaving AA, thinking about leaving AA or NA or any of the 12-step offshoots, that is a course that can speed that along and you'll get the facts.
Absolutely. And I think it's also very helpful for people. We had a lot of people come to our recent live event, which was moderating after leaving the 12-step recovery. If you're still, you know, you've got a lot of that 12-step stuff ruminating, you'll want to get that deprogramming course.
And then, of course, we have the online program, the Freedom Model online program, which probably is our most comprehensive program. It's video tutorials coupled with presentations, and it goes through the entire 470-page book by topic, and it's Michelle and I teaching you, and it's probably the most bang for the buck that you can get.
For sure. It includes everything. It includes both of our workshops. So whatever your problem is, it includes both of those workshops. It includes the deprogramming. It's like almost 200 video lessons. And once a month, the last Wednesday of every month, which is coming up next week again, we talk to you live for up to 2 hours, answer any questions you have. It becomes a coaching session.
Basically free. I mean, you already have your membership and then you can talk to us live.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, so that is included with the online program subscription.
So if you want to get any of these, and of course we have the workshops.
Yeah, individually. You can buy all of our products individually as well.
Right. So there's all these different options. You can do a la carte. And if you go to thefreedommodel.org, just follow the prompts and you can get there and check out everything.
Yes. Yes. So what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah.
Well, what I want to talk about is one of the criticisms we get from people who I think they're trying to be nice, or it's one of the things they're like, yeah, you know, the Freedom Model is great, but they're just like, you know, they just like all the other ones are, we're the only way that people get sober. We're the only way that we think people can go into recovery, which whenever anybody makes those comments, I'm like, well, they obviously don't understand what the Freedom Model is, because we're not a program of recovery.
Yeah. We're not an alternative to recovery. We're nothing.
No, what we do is we help people to solve their problems. So what we're going to talk about is, in the final analysis, everybody solves their addiction the same way. And that is, they change their mind, right? They come to a different understanding. They choose. I mean, in the end, you have to choose, because that's what it's all about. And there are infinite ways to get to that change of mind. And the most common way is people do it on their own, right? They things happen in their lives and they challenge some of their beliefs without even trying. And they decide, which is really how Mark and I solved our problem. We didn't know that at the time, but you come to the conclusion, I can be happier doing something different.
Yeah.
And so the thing about the Freedom Model is, we're the most direct route. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, this is really hard for people. So really listen into what we're saying. So a lot of people think that recovery is the most direct and powerful route to deciding, hey, this isn't for me anymore. I don't want to shoot heroin anymore. I don't want to be at the bar every night, whatever. And the irony of that is recovery as a whole, as an industry, is the largest impediment to direct preference change.
Yes.
So the direct preference change, how do you change what you believe is your relationship to the drug, the substance? How do you change that is what Michelle just said, is through the power of choosing differently. But to get there, you have to undo some mythology or change your beliefs. Now, what recovery does is it creates an entire mass of distractions from doing that.
Yes.
It makes the route incredibly circuitous in this labyrinth of recovery rituals, protocols, and distractions from what? From making a direct preference change. You're not attacking your preference internally. You're going through all these rituals like steps and mat drugs and the Sinclair method and serving others and keeping your spiritual fitness alive, addressing your traumas, doing all this stuff, which maybe some of it's good.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with why do I like the substance and attacking that directly. And so what the Freedom Model does is it takes all of that stuff, sorts through it, and says, how much of this crap do you believe? How much of it is keeping you distracted? And then we debunk it so that you can clear your analytical skills.
I mean, I like what you said about, we're not saying that all that other stuff is necessarily not helpful or bad with changing your life, becoming happier. Yeah, you want to address trauma to become happier in life. What we're saying is it overcomplicates the problem. And I explained it, I think, and something I wrote long time ago, as when you go into treatment, they have this big, it's like a big rubber band ball, right? And it's everything's intertwined. And treatment piles onto that rubber band ball so that it says, oh, you know, well, AA does it in a way because you're only as sick as your secrets, right? You have to go through all these steps and character defects and resentments, and you're not allowed to be angry and resentful and all of these things because that leads you, which is the same really when you go into the trauma theory and the negative emotion theory and all that stuff. And, you know, the opposite of addiction is connection. So if you're lonely, it ties all of these things in and says these things all cause addiction, right? And so you start to think, oh, wow, I have to be this picture of mental health that is perfection, right? I have to be this person that's super spiritual, because if I'm not, it's going to lead me
back to a condition,
yes,
called addiction.
Yes. And turns out that's not true. Like, you know, when Gabor Mate, you know, talks about the trauma, we all have this trauma. Everybody that has addiction has this trauma, and that you have to solve that trauma and find it. And it's like, no, the data doesn't support that at all.
Yeah.
There's not even barely a weak correlation to that. There are a whole ton of people that have trauma that don't experience it and go to heavy substance use. A whole ton of people. There's a whole ton of people that can find any kind of
trauma in their past that have led, that have had good lives, that just happened to really like getting high and drunk. And so you have this big rubber band ball, and trying to solve it when it's still in this state of confusion, right? You can't see where one piece begins and the other one ends, and is almost impossible. And so, yeah, you get this daily reprieve, maybe, right? As you work through these things.
As you work through the steps.
And then the minute something, I mean, I had a day yesterday that was rough. Okay. It was rough. And if I had a belief system that was, I am going to go off the deep end, I'm going to go home and get shit faced, and that's going to be cascading me into it. If I had that belief system, yesterday would have been that day. Okay. But I don't. And it doesn't occur to me because it's not real. Right. And so when you tie all of this stuff together, and you have this belief that things outside of you control you, or maybe your broken brain controls you, all bets are off. I mean, you're really kind of screwing yourself when you have these beliefs. And so what the Freedom Model does is we separate all of it.
Yeah.
Undo that rubber band ball. And then we get to look at your preference.
In a clean, in a very clean way. It's not fettered with, let me give you an example. So Michelle brought up the mood disorders, right? And so let's say you are depressed, and they say, if you're depressed, you're at higher risk of addiction.
Right.
And we know from the data that that's not entirely true. There's a lot of nuance there, and the numbers. And when we go over that in several chapters.
In chapter six, we have the data from what that looks like. How many people are diagnosed with depression, and how many people are diagnosed with substance use disorder, and where's that overlap? And it's a relatively small percentage.
So if it was a causal arrangement, like Gabor Mate wants to say that trauma causes addiction, right? Depression causes addiction. Anxiety causes addiction. If it was causal, you would find these, it wouldn't just be a weak correlation. It would be a massive causal situation.
Yeah.
And so when we start saying these things, here's the problem though. If you say it to a mass of people over and over and over and over and over again, you believe it. It becomes your narrative. It becomes your identity. And therefore, every time you feel depressed or you have an interpretation about your life that's bad, well, guess what? You get fucked up. So we are creating a world of people that believe this stuff and are acting it out and living the identity of their narratives. Yeah. So that's the tragedy of it. And so what does the Freedom Model do? In Learned Connections, in that chapter, we talk about these connections that we learn. It's not inherently true that depression causes addiction. We break down the concept of addiction. First of all, that has to be broken down. Then we break down the truth that there are plenty of people who are depressed that don't get high or drunk. And there are plenty of people who are drunk and high who aren't depressed. You know, it goes both ways. So the question becomes, once you clear away all the mythology and all these learned connections and all this complications and all these connections that we've made, the tentacles and how we've connected everything together into this mess. The Freedom Model pulls it all apart one chunk at a time, one myth at a time, until what you're left with is you and realizing that the best use of your time when you're getting high is you getting high, because you're getting high, so you actually believe that is the best use of your time at that time. Your actions tell your truth. And then the question becomes, how do you challenge that belief? If you don't want heroin and shooting heroin to be the best use of your time, because that's what you're doing. You obviously think it's the best use of your time when you're doing it, because that's what you're doing. How do you challenge that? Well, if you have a whole bunch of other shit connected to it, it becomes very complex. So the first thing we need to do is debunk all that. Then it's, right now, this is the best use of my time, as destructive as it might be. I obviously believe it is right now, but does it have to be?
Right.
And so now you start choosing. And so when you start choosing, in the absence of all this other noise, I call it recovery noise, in the absence of all that, you're able to cleanly look at this and say, is this what I want for my life? And this is how people get over the problem. When you study people who have, you know, natural remission, right? We have all these fancy terms for making a fucking decision.
Right.
That's what we're doing. We're making choices. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting to me because I've seen people and different people write articles. There's a woman, somebody sent us, a neuroscientist wrote an article about the freedom model and how she, you know, thinks that there's definitely validity to what we talk about and stuff, but we've oversimplified things, yeah. Right? And I've seen some different AI versions where people use AI to make an argument against the freedom model, which you can use AI to make an argument against anything you want, right? And whatever you've already been feeding AI, it will use what you fed it and to make the argument for you. So it's such an interesting thing. And the oversimplification almost always is there, is that, you know, oh, well, the freedom model breaks it down to be just being a choice, which we do. But there's 470 pages, okay, that was originally 1,000 pages that we pared it down and pared it down because nobody's going to read 1,000-page book. Right. And then we have all of these other products, right? It's not just now a 470-page book. There's 3 other books. There's all of these other online products that it takes to explain how you get it to a choice.
So none of those books, none of the Freedom Model, the ancillary books, the workshops, the online program, the deprogramming from AA course, none of this would need to exist if the mythology the recovery cult didn't exist. That recovery is the problem.
Right.
Recovery as a whole cloth is a problem because it's teaching mythology and keeping you from a direct preference choice change. And which you can make at any time, but you're so fettered with mythology and ideas and identities that are false and misleading that you're out in the wilderness in this labyrinth called recovery. And you're just wandering, cycling. And then you're told if you don't succeed in that messy soup, that it's something you did wrong. You didn't do it right. And I can't tell you how devastating that is to people because it's not that you're not doing recovery right. It's that recovery is wrong.
Yes.
It's that recovery is simply factually mostly incorrect. There's a lot of half-truths, which makes it really dangerous.
And confusing.
So for all of you that are out there right now, where this is starting to ring true, don't be frightened. Be liberated. Because what you've been thinking, which is, because I thought it and she thought it, which is, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Something is wrong. Why can't I seem to get this? It can't be this complex. I don't think I have traumas. Or maybe you have traumas, but you don't. I didn't get high because of my traumas. I get depressed because my life is kind of shitty. But that's not why I drink. I drink because I like to get hammered. I really like the euphoria or however I interpret this experience. Well, you're more correct than everybody that's telling you all this other stuff. So what the Freedom Model does is you can go through the chapters in the book and look at the subheadings. We set it up so that there's subheadings. And you can find the exact page of that subheading. So you may have maybe 10 things in our 470-page treatise. You can look at it and go, I've thought that. And go to those sections. And read them, and you'll be like, holy shit, there's research that refutes that. Oh my God. And then get our workshop. Check out the workshop. It's 2 hours of your time plus a smaller book.
And a workbook.
And workbook. And deconstruct your binge construct. Look at it and say, why do I go to the hotel, get a hooker, and spend a weekend there instead of with my kids and my wife? Why do I do that? You know, why do I shoot heroin in this way? That's what that workshop is for. It'll deconstruct and make you understand exactly why you're doing what you're doing. It's not a mystery. It doesn't have to be.
I want to ask everyone a question. Okay, I want you to imagine if we had never grown up with the idea that alcohol is a salve for our emotions, right? If we had never grown up believing and being taught from the time of our birth, right, that alcohol contains a party, it is the party. You can't have a party without it. We were taught that if you have a bad day, you need a toddy for the body, right? That's gonna make me feel better. Like these kinds of beliefs, don't you think they kind of feed the whole idea that if I have depression, if I'm depressed, that I need that substance? And now we're in a culture, really since probably the 80s, we're in a culture where if my emotions seem dysregulated, I can either self-medicate, like that'll help me, or I can go to a doctor and get medication. That I'm obviously broken. My brain is broken. As a matter of fact, not only were we taught this, but we were also taught, and it was believed, that if we were depressed, that it was because we had a chemical imbalance. Well, I'm not sure everybody's gotten the memo, but that has been totally debunked by science, by research, okay? There's no chemical imbalance. That happened to happen around the time they were pushing happy pills, antidepressants, okay? So it is not a coincidence that some people who feel depressed and some people who feel anxiety seek substances and end up with heavy substance use problems. That's not a coincidence. That's by design because of what we've been taught. So if you start to challenge those beliefs, then everything falls apart. And you really do learn, oh, that can't change my mind.
Right.
You know, right. It's all of a sudden, then you can really go to what do I like about this experience that I'm having right now? You know, I'm sitting here, I'm having my drinks like I do every single night. I'm popping a couple benzos and what do I like about the experience? Is this really the way I want to be spending my evenings?
Yeah, so there's other impediments that you've learned, whether you realize it or not. So when you're doing a direct preference change, when you've gotten rid of all the recovery noise rituals and you're not taking the pills and you're not delving into Suboxone anymore and that all these things, right? You've kind of eliminated all that. Then you're stuck with you and your habit. Right, which can be very dangerous. You know, you may have overdosed, your life may be cascading in all different bad directions. But ultimately, it comes down to you and your relationship to that drug. Usually, the last thing that keeps you from being able to make that direct preference change, to make that choice, right? That's what we're talking about, where you change, is guilt and shame. So guilt and shame are very emotionally heavy resource things. They block your analytical skills. So as the opposite of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step paradigm, where they say that self-knowledge availed us nothing, self-knowledge is not the answer. What the Freedom Model says is that your analytical skills, your self-knowledge is the answer. There is no other answer. There is no other answer but you and that relationship, because you're the one creating the relationship to the drug. There is nobody else. There is no addiction. There is no other nebulous force. There is no third party happening. There is no biologic taking over of your dopamine. That's not happening. So, and certainly your brain does change, but that doesn't change what you believe about things. So once you've cleared away all this stuff, you're stuck usually with guilt and shame. Now, guilt and shame are the ultimate blanket to cover up any analytical powers you have. It's like a blanket over your preference. You Yep. love to get high. You love to get drunk. You can't admit it because you feel guilty. And so when I'm coaching somebody, we go through an hour and a half of how do you undo this guilt and shame, what's behind it, and then you strip it away. And what you're left with is you, your analytical powers to say, this is right now, getting high is the best use of my time, which I know is counterintuitive because everybody teaches you never to frame it that way. It's the best use of my time because that's what I'm doing.
Right.
I've chosen this. And then you get to challenge that and say, but is it? You can't do that if guilt is not allowing you to see your truth, the truth that you like this thing. So if you can't see that you like it, if you can't even admit that, how can you challenge it? You can't. You can't go from step one to step two. You can't challenge something you don't know or can't admit to because you feel too guilty about it.
I want you to think about the, like, backtrack a little bit. And when Mark said, this is the best use of my time.
Yeah.
All right. How did you feel when you thought about that? When you think about, you know, instantly, I would think anybody that's still struggling would feel instant guilt for that.
And fear.
I can't say that.
That's the blanket that stops you from being able to use your own free will and analytical powers. There's nothing blocking you from saying, wait a minute, is this something that I really want to continue to enjoy?
Yes.
Not, I shouldn't do this. I have to stop. My wife's pissed at me. I feel guilty. I need to go to another meeting. You see, that's all recovery speak. That's all the shit that keeps you trying to guilt yourself and flog yourself into compliance. And it never works. You can't hate yourself into change.
No.
It's never going to work. So stop beating the shit out of yourself by going to meetings and saying, I'm just coming back. Any newcomers today coming back? Yeah, that's me. Right? Let's shame them a little more. Oh, we accept you. You know, you chronic relapser. You know? And so there's none of that in the freedom model. Let's debunk this. Let's look at the fact that you like to get fucking hammered, or else you wouldn't do it. Like, let's be obvious. Let's point out the total obvious truth. And then let's strip away the guilt and shame so that at least you can say it and then analyze whether it's what you want to continue doing. And something miraculous happens when we do this. I'll have a session, maybe the first and second sessions, where we strip away all this guilt. And by the second or third session, the person's like, holy shit. I started realizing so many things about my use. I started realizing things about my life. I said, that's what happens when we eliminate the thing that's blanketing your analytical skills. Suddenly, your positive drive strikes out and you start figuring things out so quickly, it's ridiculous. And that, by the way, is what people do that are outside the recovery cult. That's how they change.
Yeah. You know, when people struggle to be able to get to that point where they can look at what they're doing without judgment, right? And start and strip all that away. One of the things that I will do in coaching is I'll say, I want you to think of another activity that you do that has high costs, but is not an activity that's deemed to be bad. Okay. Because, and for some people that's, I like to ride motorcycles really fast. Yeah. I've crashed a couple of times. Nobody will look at you and judge that, right? So you don't feel guilty for riding a motorcycle, and it's really dangerous. It's far more dangerous than drinking 6 beers a night or whatever it is you're doing, or 2 bottles of wine. It's very dangerous to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, statistically,
okay?
It's
statistically
really crazy.
Speaking,
they call it donor cycles at hospitals.
Exactly. So, but nobody would look at that. You wouldn't know to feel guilty to do that. And everybody has these kinds of things that they do that they really love that they don't look at and they can't imagine their lives without. but they don't look at it the same way. If you can look at your substance use in that way, that this is something I really enjoy doing and there are risks involved and I'm willing to take them because I'm doing it. Okay. You don't do something you don't want to do and you don't see value in doing. That escapes people so many times. They genuinely think I'm still doing this and I don't really want to do it. No, that's not true. You're blowing smoke up your own ass. Okay. So what we're saying is let's look at the reality of what you're doing.
Yeah, your truth.
Your truth. And boy, when we see in coaching, light bulbs go off, right? They're like, oh, yeah, I do like it. I really like it.
Yeah. And you have to temporarily push out the costs. We know that costs factor in. They're always going to factor in. But for the process of analysis, we have to look at, why do you express your positive drive in this way? Why do you like sticking a needle in your arm and shooting heroin? And the first step to really understanding that is admitting it and saying, I love this. It's an activity that when I'm doing it is very important to me and I value that experience. And sometimes we have to do this in the privacy of a different room and we sit down without any familial noise, no family around, no recovery ghosts, no old thoughts and narratives playing in, but just really concentrate on, I like this activity when I'm doing it. It's the best use of my time when I'm doing it because I'm choosing it. So it has to be in that window of time. That is the best use of my time. And when I have a student and I say, anytime you get high or drunk, I need you to say that to yourself. This is the best use of my time, but follow it up with, because you're immediately going to feel guilt and shame. Then you get rid of the guilt and shame. And the next step is, you know what? But is it?
Yeah.
Now,
without guilt and shame,
without guilt and
ask
shame,
that question with curiosity.
That's right. Now there's a lot more to a coaching session to get there. So everybody has use that sits in a larger context of factors. And so sometimes we have to go through those factors. So I get a lot of people. So about 50% of the people that read the book or do our workshops or the online program move on with their lives. We know that now.
They solve their problem.
We've been doing this for 37 years and we've done the studies. So you know, they read it and they're like, holy shit. But then you have the people that are a little deeper in the recovery cult. Their narratives are more powerful. Their guilt and shame are deep and blinding. They blind all analytical skills. They believe that self-knowledge is not the answer. So they're searching for some recovery ritual that's just going to miraculously change them. And those are the people where I got to take them in coaching, or Michelle does, and say, okay, how many myths do you have? And I'll sit there when they're talking, I'll write down, they might have 8 out of the 24 myths. And I go, we got to work on this shit and get that out of the vision. And then we can do this analysis. So if you're one of those people who have read the book and you're still struggling, you know that what we're saying is true, all the data makes sense, but you're still struggling with guilt, shame, and narratives. Most of the people, and I think Michelle would agree to this, most of the people that I get into those sessions say, holy shit, I had no idea how much guilt and shame and fear has been put into me through this system of recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. And give yourself time, because the older you are, the more set we are in what we believe. We have what's called confirmation bias. So any time that we do something that confirms that belief, regardless of what that belief is, anytime we drink, we go beyond what we think we should, and, you know, bad shit happens. We're like, oh, there it is. There it is. But all the other times that you didn't, you ignored. Okay. So you have to consciously look for evidence that challenges your beliefs. That's something that has to be done mindfully. And that's why sometimes coaching is helpful, because with a dialogue, certain questions get asked, and then you start to look at your history and you can recognize, oh my God, I did ignore all the evidence, and it's a lot. There's a ton of evidence that shows that what I believe is total bullshit. And that's the things that start to click with people. And then they start to look for more and more evidence of what they believe is wrong and more evidence of what they've learned is actually true.
And one last thing that I think is really, really vital and important, and it's just a safety concern, and that is when people are figuring out that this is the best use of my time, I get high and drunk and I do like it, and they're getting rid of their judgment, they're getting rid of their guilt. If they're a heroin user, crack user, meth user,
drugs that they have to buy in the black market.
Yeah, I tend to say if you're gonna continue to get high and drunk, I would suggest you go with a safer drug, stay at home, don't hide it.
Get test kits for fentanyl.
Yeah, and if you're in that world, I'd rather you experimented with drinking at home, or pot or something like that. So we make some concessions, some practical concessions that sometimes are advisable, because frankly, one small hit of fentanyl and you're dead. So I'm never into, you may prefer heroin, but if you want to run some experiments about, and maybe you're getting high, I always like to reduce down to some less toxic or potentially fatal drug.
Yeah.
So that's just a practical concern that you should be thinking about. That is a cost that you can't win from.
No.
You know, people die. So be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. When we get the comments, and you can look at, go on to our social media and look at the comments. When we get the comments from people that are like, you're telling me I should moderate my crack use, moderate my heroin use. We've never said anything like that.
We say you can.
Yeah. I mean, there is evidence that shows that people do use those substances moderately, but even moderate users, you know,
can die
because they buy it on the black market. Everybody that dies from overdose is not a heavy user. And so those risks are always there.
Yes.
That's all that we're saying.
And they need to be factored into this decision making. Ultimately, it's up to you. When I'm coaching somebody, I say, you know, that has to factor in. It has to.
Yeah. Right. So thank you, everyone. If you are interested in any of our online products or coaching, go to thefreedommodel.org. You can always call us. Our toll-free number is 1-888-424-2626. Or you can email us at info@thefreedommodel.org if you want to set up a time to talk with us to see what products may be most helpful to you. We have coaches on our website now, certified Freedom Model coaches. You can choose the coach. They have different specialties. And you can set up a free consultation with any of the coaches on our in our directory. So thank you, everyone. And hey, if you like our podcast, like, subscribe, and share it with your friends.
All right, everybody. Take care.
Bye.